such a horrible sound. There are swarms of mozzies afflicting much of the East Coast right now, and that is set to continue for some time. How are you coping, if that is you? Associate Professor Cameron Webb is a medical entomologist and a mosquito expert at the New South Wales Health Pathology and the University of Sydney. Cameron, welcome to Life Matters. Great to have you with us. How bad is the mozzie season this year, Cameron?
It's looking very good if you're a mosquito. Maybe not so great if you're one of these people who are often bitten by mosquitoes and react badly to them. So mosquitoes have a pretty simple life cycle in many ways. They are completely reliant on water and warmth. And unfortunately, there has been plenty of water that's come into the environment over the last few weeks. We've had flooding in many areas. And as soon as that flood water recedes into stagnant pools and puddles in the floodplains and wetlands, it's going to coincide with the warmer temperatures that summer will bring. And that means that mosquito populations not only will continue to increase, but they probably will persist right through summer. We're already seeing some big numbers of mosquitoes in western New South Wales, in places like Victoria. So unfortunately, we're off to a bad start, and it's not going to get any better very quickly, unfortunately.
Well, I did wonder if mozzie-pocalypse was a bit of an overreach, but I noticed one of your recent news articles, the headline was, "Mozzies are everywhere right now, including giant ones and those that make us sick." So, you know, I'm not feeling particularly safe about it. Do they swarm as such? I mean, do you get a swarm like you might with bees?
Yeah, so mosquitoes vary a lot in their sort of biology depending on the type of mosquito that you have, but you certainly will get these swarms that assist mating of the mosquitoes. But also, I guess we might affectionately refer to the swarms as the huge numbers of mosquitoes that descend on us or that we inadvertently walk into if we're near their habitats. So certainly we can get exposed to high numbers of mosquitoes very quickly, particularly with conditions like we've been experiencing in recent weeks.
Yeah, we're hearing these stories of people having to pressure hose these giant mounds of tiny corpses off their decks in the morning. Cameron, how long do you think this kind of peak season is going to last this year?
So I think the first thing to mention is that we do see this explosion in flying insect populations, both during spring, but particularly wet spring. So it's worth noting that a lot of these insects that people are seeing may not be mosquitoes. So you get midges and other flying insects attracted to the lights around your home. But unfortunately, of course, mosquitoes are part of the mix there as well. The problem is that the conditions that are occurring at the moment are going to continue right into summer. So much of eastern Australia is completely waterlogged. These ground pools and puddles are going to persist right through many of the areas of Australia and provide great habitat for mosquitoes. So mosquitoes lay their eggs in and around these ponds or puddles or water holding containers. And during the warmer months, it might only take them a week or so for those eggs to hatch and complete development and the mosquitoes emerge. They only live for about 3 weeks, but their populations can build and be sustained over many weeks and months. And I think, unfortunately, that's something we'll be facing this summer, because as the weather warms up, it's probably not going to warm up enough that all these pools and puddles are going to dry up quickly and be removed from their for their use by mosquitoes.
We're speaking with Associate Professor Dr. Cameron Webb, who, as you can hear, is an expert on mosquitoes from New South Wales Health Pathology and the University of Sydney. Cameron, how do health authorities respond to mosquito outbreaks in the first instance? Is it, you know, like in the movies where there's a giant flamethrower and they just wade through them? Please say
I think
yes.
We have this. No, unfortunately, it's a bit more subtle than that. And I guess one of the reasons is that, we haven't got a good reputation in terms of mosquito control over recent decades. And so, you know, the widespread use of insecticides to knock out the mosquito populations can have not only an adverse impact on the environment, but also build resistance amongst mosquito populations as well. And so while I'm sure that many of your listeners would be quite happy to have a kill them all, whatever it takes approach to mosquitoes, we're a little bit more ecologically sustainable in our approaches these days. So there's a couple of different ways that health authorities in states and territories in Australia would address this. Sometimes it is through the judicious use of mosquito control agents in the wetlands. The products we use these days are much more sensitive and targeted to mosquitoes. They're often applied to the wetlands and stopping those mosquitoes emerging. But probably one of the most important tools that health authorities have is our surveillance programs for mosquitoes and the pathogens they carry. And so together with local councils, health authorities monitor mosquito populations, how they change from week to week, not only the abundance of mosquitoes, but the types of mosquitoes are circulating. Those mozzies can then be tested to see whether they're carrying any viruses. And that provides an early warning to the community about activity of these viruses and hopefully assist them in taking steps to avoid mosquito bites as much as possible.
Wow, the text message line has exploded, Cameron Webb, with questions for you. We might see if we can whip through a few of them quickly, though I do just want to read this one out before we start. I saw a job ad a few months ago, must have experience breeding mosquitoes. And I thought, who has that? Then I realised, your guest. I mean, it's a niche field, but it's an important one, isn't it, Cameron?
It is, but unfortunately, most of us do have experience because there are mosquitoes that love living in our backyards around Australia. And so you might not know it, but there's probably many mosquitoes breeding in the backyards of your listeners over recent weeks, and hopefully they won't be in the future after they've listened to some of the things we talk about today.
Well, and that is actually first question of the rank. There's pooling water in my backyard from the persistent rain. Is there anything I can do to reduce that good breeding habitat or make the pools less attractive to mosquitoes?
So the mosquitoes that live in our backyards, for the most part, they're trying to find those water holding containers. So that could be everything from the drains and sump pits around your backyard, your blocked roof gutters, your potted plant sources, your bird baths, but particularly, plastic containers you've got in the backyard. Kids' toys are a great one as well because they've been sort of discarded in the backyard. They've got lots of nooks and crannies that catch the rainwater, and mosquitoes will lay their eggs in and around those. So as best you can, clean up that the backyard so that you haven't got those water holding containers. If you've got something like a bird bath or bowls and things that you keep out for pets or wildlife to give them water, just flush it out, replace it once a week. If there are any mosquitoes, you'll disrupt their breeding cycle. Make sure your rainwater tank is properly screened as well, stopping them accessing that. And then that way, you'll just sort of generally reduce the amount of mosquitoes in your backyard. And it's the mozzies around our home that can really be a more persistent pest problem during the warmer months.
There's that perennial one too. Mosquitoes love biting me but leave my husband alone, says one person. Is there something wrong with my blood?
No, there's nothing wrong with you if mosquitoes bite you more than your friends and family. This is a phenomenon that we do know is true. And scientists for many decades have been trying to sort of unpick the reasons why a mosquito is more likely to bite one person more than others. And there's a couple of reasons we do that. Firstly, we might try to want to know who in the community is most susceptible to mosquito bites and consequently mosquito-borne disease. Perhaps we might be thinking about new types of mosquito repellents that we could develop. But importantly, we might be wanting to know what's that sort of secret ingredient that might lure mosquitoes in that we can then incorporate into traps so that we can do mosquito control. But the problem is that it's a really complex puzzle to solve. And so it's only the female mosquito that bites. And when she's looking for an animal or particularly a person to bite, she can sense the carbon dioxide we breathe out. But then it's probably the smell of our skin that really turns them on. And there are hundreds of different chemical compounds on our skin. And the cocktail of smells that you have, if it's a bit more attractive to mosquitoes than your friends and family, you're the one who's likely to get bitten.
So you can't change that through diet or anything?
Unfortunately, there's no evidence that a change of diet will change that sort of chemical smell on your skin. There's nothing you can eat or drink to stop you being bitten by mosquitoes. Some studies overseas have suggested that you probably inherit your mosquito attractiveness from your parents. And some recent studies out of North America suggest that those people that are more likely to get bitten by mosquitoes have a higher concentration of carboxylic acid on their skin. But even then, the problem is that the types of acids on those individuals changes from person to person. So there's not that one perfect ingredient that the mosquitoes are attracted to. So it's a very complex kind of question. But at the end of the day, I think it's worth remembering that I'm yet to meet a person in Australia who is not bitten by any mosquitoes. It only takes one mosquito bite to transmit some of the pathogens that will make us sick. And so whether you think you're a mosquito magnet or not, you should be taking steps to avoid mosquito bites when you're out and about.
Another question on that. Harry from Point Pluma says, why do some mozzies bite harder than others? A couple over the past few nights have felt like Pinocchio with a sharper nose.
Well, we do see a strange diversity of mosquitoes at the moment. We see this in spring anyway, but particularly because of the conditions and all of the rainfall, we're seeing an increase in the types of mosquitoes we generally refer to as floodwater mosquitoes. These mozzies tend to be a little bit larger as well. Maybe you sort of feel them a bit more when they bite. But it's also important to remember that you won't always feel mosquitoes biting. And so a lot of our mozzies have evolved over a long time to be pretty sneaky in when they grab a blood meal from us. And so you should never really be waiting until you see mosquitoes or feel mosquito bites before you put on that mosquito repellent. So as we head into summer, I think, you know, getting into the routine of using mosquito repellents before you spend any time outdoors is a really good thing to do.
Now, repellents, many questions coming in about repellents. Monica says, do the natural mosquito bans work? There are some alleging that they're 14-day bans available for kids. And another one says, do the electronic mozzie zappers work? What's the data on those things, Cameron?
So to talk about the mosquito repellent wristbands and patches first, unfortunately, they don't provide whole body protection against mosquito bites. And so I know that people are sometimes reluctant to put on mosquito repellents. They might not like the feel of them, or maybe a bit reluctant to put them on children. But it's important to note that the products that you get from your local supermarket or pharmacy, those products that have been through the testing process by the Australian Pesticides and Veterinary Medicines Authority, are safe to use. So follow the directions. Most of those products can be used on children above the age of 12 months. Those colourful bands and patches, they just don't provide adequate protection. So generally, I would avoid those. In terms of the electronic zappers, there's a couple of different categories here to talk about, which I think is really important. So any devices that use bright blue lights, like electrocutor devices, they're good at killing a whole range of other flying insects, things like moths and other insects like that. They generally don't work very good in killing mosquitoes. So I wouldn't rely on those to protect yourself from mosquito bites. Any of the ultrasonic type devices I would avoid. There's no evidence that sound repels mosquitoes, so you can avoid your apps for your smartphone as well. They're not going to protect you. But the plug-in units, which are sometimes sold or marketed as mosquito zappers, can be actually very useful. They plug in or are powered by batteries, and they release insecticide from an impregnated cardboard pad or reservoir of oil. That insecticide can be a very powerful knockdown of mosquitoes, and so think about them as a smokeless mosquito coil, very useful to use indoors at night, particularly if you don't have the opportunity to have your windows and doors screened to stop mosquitoes coming indoors.
Now, Cameron Webb, you said that the repellents that are available on the market have all been screened for health by our public health authorities. Susie in Newcastle says, my daughter's pregnant. Is it safe for her to use those on-skin mosquito repellents too?
Yeah, there's no problems at all. Check the directions on the label, but there's no evidence that using any of those insect repellents will be a problem. Even if you're a little bit cautious about that, check the range of products that are available. It's important to remember that the concentration of the active ingredients in these repellents will vary quite a bit between the different types of formulations and the brands. You don't necessarily need to have a high concentration of active ingredient if you're only outdoors for short periods of time, because the concentration of the product determines how long it lasts, not how many mosquitoes you keep away. So have a look at some of the different products and what works best for you, because really the product that works best is a product that you're more comfortable using in a safe and effective way routinely.
Associate Professor Dr. Cameron Webb is our guest today on Life Matters, a mosquito expert from the University of Sydney. Cameron, what about the environment? I mean, if we're putting these chemicals on our skin and going out and, I don't know, swimming in rivers or hanging out in the bush, is that going to have an impact on those ecosystems?
So this question does come up from time to time, and generally speaking, the concentrations of products that we're putting on our skin is relatively low. By the time it washes off or goes down the drain or gets into waterways, the concentrations are generally so low that it's not likely to have any sort of ecological consequences, which is good. And it's also important to remember that these products that we're using insect repellents, not insecticides. So products like diethyl toluamide, picaridin, and oil of lemon eucalyptus, which are the active ingredients in the repellents that most health authorities are recommending, they don't actually kill mosquitoes. They just essentially either mask your smell or switch off the blood-feeding appetite of mosquitoes. And so you shouldn't think about them necessarily as insecticides the same way that you would against, you know, in terms of some of the other products that you might spray around your home that do have warnings about using near waterways and aquatic habitats.
Martin in Brisbane texted in that they don't really get mozzies in their apartment anymore since he started allowing the spiders to continue living on the ceiling. So that's a permaculture approach there from Martin. Cameron, we should ask about mosquito-borne diseases, because quite a few people are saying which are the diseases we should be worried about and how bad are they this year with the increase in the mosquitoes?
Yeah, so there's a few mosquito-borne pathogens in Australia that we need to be concerned about. Ross River virus is the mosquito-borne pathogen that infects the most people every year. So on average across Australia, we get about 5,000 cases of disease. The symptoms can be incredibly variable, fever, rash, headache, joint pain. In some cases, it can be incredibly mild, but in others, it can be severely debilitating and last for many weeks or months. We're fortunate, though, in that the outcomes of that disease are not fatal. However, things have changed a little bit over the last year or so because we have had the arrival and widespread activity of Japanese encephalitis virus, particularly in southeastern Australia. And even though there are fewer cases of disease, we've had about 42 cases of disease over the last 12 months. Unfortunately, seven people have died from that. And so that is a pathogen that can cause an illness, which is potentially life-threatening. And so there are concerns about the activity of this virus again this summer. There's already been some evidence of activity in Western New South Wales, and the conditions, the environmental conditions this summer are exactly the same as we saw last summer, thanks to La Nina. So I think the important message here is that there are going to be a lot of mosquitoes around in many parts of Australia this summer. We have viruses active that can be transmitted by mosquitoes, and so we shouldn't be thinking about mosquitoes as mostly an annoyance. They are a health risk, and we should be taking those steps to reduce our mosquito bites as much as possible.
Does that mean that, you know, making sure repellents are available in flood affected areas should be a public health issue? It shouldn't just be a kind of left to the market issue.
Well, health authorities around Australia are looking at ways in which they can help distribute mosquito repellents to certain communities that are deemed to be at risk. And I can just speak to for New South Wales in that repellents have been distributed to many public health units and local government in these areas, not only where they're being impacted by floods and seeing an increase in mosquito populations, but where there is evidence that there has been Japanese encephalitis virus active in the past. So together with a range of different initiatives, health authorities are looking at the role of insect repellents as helping to keep our communities safe.
What can you do if your local supermarket is sold out? It's been happening a lot in southern New South Wales lately.
Yeah, I think that there's always, we shouldn't rely completely on insect repellents. I mean, even though they are a very useful tool, if they're not available to you, there's a range of different other ways you can try to reduce mosquito bites. Probably one of the best things is provide a physical barrier against mosquitoes. So wearing long sleeve shirts, particularly loose fitting light coloured shirts, long pants and covered shoes will provide a physical barrier against mosquito bites, particularly if you're spending a lot of time, you know, working or fishing, bushwalking, gardening outdoors for long periods of time, particularly in the late afternoon, dusk, evening, and particularly that first thing in the morning when mosquitoes are most active. And there's always the use of those plug-in insecticide type devices that you can use around your home. If you're able to, screening your windows and doors to make sure mosquitoes aren't coming inside, very useful as well. And of course, if you're out walking about, you know, you can always use netting on the kids' prams, or there's also some pretty, you know, a different range of sort of head nets and things like that if mosquitoes are particularly bad and you're having to spend a lot of time outdoors.
Yeah, I can see a run on beekeeper suits coming soon in some of the flood-affected areas. Cameron, just a quick, I guess, two-part question to finish up with. I understand that some scientists are looking at genetic modification to try and decrease breeding in mosquito populations. How far away are we from that being a solution? And is it okay to just kind of kill off mosquitoes?
Yeah, it's a great question, isn't it? Because scientists have been really good at working out why mosquito bites make us sick, working out better ways to kill mosquitoes. We're now thinking about ways in which through genetic modification or perhaps the introduction of parasites or pathogens into mosquitoes in the laboratory and then releasing them into the field might be a way to possibly even eradicate mosquitoes. But what we haven't been very good at is working out what the ecological role of mosquitoes are. We know they're food for birds and bats and fish and frogs. They pollinate plants, but we're yet to find a plant or animal on the planet that is completely reliant on mosquitoes. The thing is, a lot of these new technologies, which are showing great promise in terms of either modifying or reducing mosquito populations, are really encouraging. And a lot of them are directed towards mosquitoes that are living in basically our rubbish in our cities and suburbs. And these are mosquitoes that love these water-holding containers, particularly across Southeast Asia, the Pacific, and South America. These mosquitoes like the yellow fever mosquito that drives outbreaks of dengue and Zika and chikungunya virus. But the ecological role of those mosquitoes is probably relatively low. I'm happy to see them decimated or even eradicated in some instances. But it's when we look at the mosquitoes that are coming from our wetlands, that's a different question. And I don't think I really want to sign off on the eradication of those mosquitoes just yet until we understand what their ecological role is.
Okay, put the flamethrower away for the moment. Cameron Webb, thank you so much for joining us today on Life Matters. It's been a fascinating insight into these tiny little pests. Much appreciate your time.
Thanks, Hilary.
Associate Professor Dr. Cameron Webb, a mosquito expert from New South Wales Health Pathology and the University of Sydney.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.